in turn introduce our first speaker. And she will be followed by Irwin Hott, not Sue, but our speaker will be followed by Irwin Hott, who will add to this discussion. And with that said, I'll go ahead and turn this over to Sue. Thanks.
The question is not if you will be in an emergency or disaster, but when. Are you ready to handle it? Our speaker, Kitty Hebner, has experienced personal emergencies, gained insight into the operation of disasters through providing amateur radio communications for emergency personnel, and has heard Ohioans with disabilities express concern about being able to get needed assistance from first responders when disaster strikes. These experiences motivated her to review emergency preparedness literature and establish dialogue with influential emergency responders. You will pick up tools that she found through this process that may save your life when the unexpected hits. I have accompanied Kitty as she serves on the Governor's Council on People with Disabilities and the State Trauma Committee. I am proud to say that she represents the disability population with passion and zeal. Please join me in welcoming Kitty Hebner.
I found it. That mic is over there, and I still found it.
Yay!
Have you ever been in an emergency or a disaster? Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. I've heard yes from several people. Nolan, how did that feel?
Terrifying.
Stressful and horrible. Depending on your level of preparation, it's pretty awful.
Okay. So, I think that you said a key there. Depending on your preparation, some of you I heard say, it was horrible. It was awful. I've had... Please? Okay. And the list goes on. But I think we get the point that serving or being in a disaster can evoke, and often will evoke, feelings of powerlessness, being out of control. Vulnerability rises to the surface.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm.
So, today, you will pick up some tools that I have found through reviewing the literature and talking with emergency responders that you will hopefully be able to use that may actually save your life. And these tools are going to be some things that you will work on individually and some opportunities for you to work on collectively as a group. So one of the things we always hear in disasters that you have to be prepared. What does that mean? What exactly does that mean? I think it means that you have to first assess your situation. What do you think are the types of disasters that are most likely to occur right here?
Tornado.
Fire? I'm sorry? Snow emergencies, floods, flash floods.
Fire.
Okay, fire we got. Power outages. Yeah, we got that one. I think I feel the earth move beneath my feet.
Yeah.
That being a victim of a crime can also be. How about somebody coming and letting loose some anthrax? Or, God forbid, setting a bomb on this hotel?
Yeah.
No, I did not say that anyone did that, so do not panic.
Right.
But that is a form of terrorist a form of a disaster. So we have man-made and natural disasters. Oh, okay. If we can kind of limit the talk and pouring from desserts and drinks and whatever, that would help everybody. Also, I just wanted to mention, so we have the types of disasters, and you first look at your assessment of what kind of disasters could happen right here in this very hotel. And I think you identified a lot of them. Now, the next piece is, what are you going to do to help yourself be safe? That's the goal, right? You want to survive this disaster? You want to be as safe as possible? Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. So, what do you think are some things that you could do in terms of helping you be safe?
Stay calm.
Stay calm.
First aid kit.
First aid kit? Okay, have a plan of where to go. And how about your to-go kit? Okay, and also your personal support network. Some people know this as friend, neighbor, or family member. But Rob, it's really the personal support network. And the personal support network can and should include people close by as well as people far away. When I was living in Boston back in the, early 80s? Yeah, early 80s, I guess. If you would have been in my apartment with me, you would have smelled a very strange, unidentifiable odor.
No.
And you probably would have wondered what it is. As did I. I went.
No.
Excuse me. If I can hear you up here, you're definitely distracting other people. If you would have been with me, you would have wondered what that odor was. Well, I went to my landlord, and my landlord did not speak English very well.
Oh God.
And I was living in the basement of a single-family house. I called it my apartment. It was basically a one room, and I was sharing living quarters with the furnace.
Oh, no.
The furnace was a good roommate. Kept me warm. Almost killed me, but it did keep me warm.
Oh,
so, when I talked to the landlord did not understand English very well. I actually called, because I didn't know what to do. I called my friend Phil. Phil was coming over to do some reading for me, and when he came over, he said, Kitty, I am not going to read to you in this environment. And I said, Phil, I gotta prepare. You gotta help me with this. He said, you can come to my house. And in fact, I'm not even gonna let you stay here the night. I will talk to your landlord and try to get him to understand, because something is not right. Well, he did talk to my landlord, but my landlord assured him that everything was safe. So I stayed at Phil's house that night. The next morning, he brought me back home at my insistence, and as I went into the house, to the room, went back to the restroom close to the furnace, and the next thing I remember, I was standing in the middle of the street.
Oh my gosh.
To this day, I honestly do not remember getting there. And I did not have my cane. I was not using a guide dog at that time. I can't even imagine how I managed not to get hit. Keep in mind, this was Boston.
Yeah.
That freaked me out. I mean, so I went back. It freaked me out so much that I went back into that very house.
No kidding.
And I called my friend Marcia. I said, Marcia, I am truly scared. Something is wrong. I found myself standing in the middle of my street. I don't remember getting there. I really don't. And I didn't have a cane with me. Well, this scared Marcia. She said, well, I don't know what's going on, but I'm coming over to get you, and you're going to stay at my house today. That was Sunday. I stayed with her Monday morning. Monday morning I went back to work and made it through part of the day. Came home because I had to prepare for a job interview. Came home, opened the door to my this house, and the odor was horrific. It was too much. And I knew at that point I had to do something. I couldn't keep calling my friends. Because all of them had said at some point, you need to call 911. But I kept thinking, no, my emergency is not that bad. Surely there are people out there with a greater emergency than mine. Carol. So, sure enough, I called 911. I explained, please, it's not a real emergency, but there's just something really weird smelling here. They came and issued a code violation and basically said, you know, there's a lot serious going on here. You almost died of carbon monoxide poisoning.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank goodness Phil and Marcia were around. They literally both saved my life.
Ice cream?
No.
Thank you.
No? Yeah, I should have called right away, but I was in my 20s, and I didn't have a whole lot of knowledge from the School of Hard Knocks yet.
Ice cream?
Yeah.
So, that shows you the value, the importance of having someone to call on, and maybe having that person close by. Now, there was another time that I had to interact more with emergency responders, and I had been swimming. When I got out of the pool, I put my hands on the side of the pool and pushed up to get out of the pool. Well, in the process of doing it, there was a starting block there, and my head encountered it. Now, it was my fault because I had not checked. And you know you should check, but there was never a starting block in the shallow end of the pool.
Yeah.
But except for this day. So I said, oh, I'm fine, you know, I can keep on swimming. And the lifeguard was very adamant. No, Kitty, you have to get out of the pool. You have to get out now. So I said, okay. Got out. He said, it's not bad, but we do have to call campus security. Now, campus security was RoboCop. That's the only way I can characterize this gentleman. RoboCop shows up on the scene and he says, oh my God, there's blood all over the floor. Now, what would you be thinking if you heard something like that, having just been told by the lifeguard that it really was nothing to worry about?
Yeah.
I thought, am I losing 13 pints? Where's Red Cross when you need them? Or whoever picks up the blood. Or is my brain spewing?
Yeah.
So RoboCop even told me that he knew how it happened. He told me that I hit my head on the floor. I said, no, I hit my head on the starting block. And we went round and round for a while. RoboCop decided that this was really serious. It is time to bring in the big 911 people. So he did. One guy is taking a flashlight and looking at my head. Is he looking for any more brain cells or what? Another guy says, yep, we are going to take you to the hospital in the ambulance. Now, the thing I haven't told you is it is a cold day in January in Cincinnati, and I am sitting in a very wet bathing suit. So the idea of moseying out to an ambulance just really didn't thrill me. And I said, the only thing I could think of, I don't have my insurance card with me. At that point, I was able to call a friend and get some help. And he came over. He was a physician's assistant. And he said, Kitty, it's really no big deal. It is just a really minor cut. So, again, I had people that I could contact and did take advantage of my local contacts, but I also had all of this information from emergency responders, which was confusing the bejesus out of me. My blood pressure was probably at the point of making me have a stroke. Now, compare and contrast that encounter where information was confusing. I felt big time stressed because at this point I really didn't know how deep the cut was, if I had lost 12 and a half pints of blood. I really had no clue what was going on.
Oh, there it is.
And it was a matter of who do I trust. Compare and contrast that to another situation that I had back in August. If you would have been in my home in Cincinnati, you would have smelled something really weird. Yeah, I get the weird smells in my houses. But this one was, it smelled like something kind of burning, like maybe a motor burning, but it was kind of hard to pinpoint. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, do I just see if this dissipates? No, I could be really proud that I didn't call until my house burns. Nah. So I called 911, explained the situation very quickly because they don't have a lot of time. And by the time I got my guide dog and my retired dog out of the house, they were pulling up in front of my house. Yeah, I was impressed. And I explained the situation to them because they came sirens blaring and everything. It was kind of embarrassing. And they talked, they went in, did a very thorough check of my house. Nobody could find anything wrong. But they stayed with me until the scent dissipated. And the one thing, though, that really impressed me, one of the firefighters, in fact, the gentleman who consistently stayed with me, as we were getting ready to go back in the house, he asked me if I would like to take his arm. Yeah, wow. And I said, how did you know? He said, well, I know the Rogers. I kid you not. He had an encounter with Joyce and Rob Rogers, and so by them educating him, he knew about sighted guide techniques. That incident, I was much calmer. I think the reason he offered me sighted guide was I had stood outside, and I don't know what happened. I know how to get back to my house. I clearly know. But at that moment, I couldn't think of it.
Right.
And he obviously picked up on this right away and offered assistance. And then another guy came along and asked if I wanted him to take one of my dogs. It's really kind of tough to heal two dogs on the left side. So I did. So my point with the responders is that I do think that they need disability awareness training. I lucked out the second time just because the Rogers happened to have been in my neighborhood. We actually do live close together. But anyway, I really believe that it's important that we provide some type of disability awareness training to emergency responders.
Yes.
Governor's Council on People with Disabilities
exactly.
passed a motion to that effect last spring, a few months back. Thank you. And then I started looking to see what happens to motions that are passed by Governor's Council. And nobody seemed to know, but I really did not want this to go into the proverbial black hole, so I have been taking action.
Good for you.
I've been contacting people in the know, and I've learned that motion, in order to make any changes to the curriculum for first responders, it has to be approved by the State Emergency Medical Board. I went to the State EMS Board. And they're not so willing to change. In fact, I hooked up through the Governor's Council with a gentleman named Captain Pachorek. Those of you who live in Delaware County are fortunate because he lives in your county and he has done some really good things. He is our advocate. And he is going to help us do this disability awareness training. The date is going to be April the 21st. We've gotten a grant to fund some of it. Right now, EMS is supposed to have an ad hoc committee meeting to discuss it in December, but they're working a little slow. I urge council chapters and ultimately the state council and ultimately ACB in general to look at the issue of disability awareness training, or as they call it, special needs training, or sometimes now it's called functional needs training. Whatever the label you want to use. We are a growing segment of the population, and we need to make sure that the responders can help us in our time of need. So I urge you to talk with your local chapters and talk to find out, do you want to support what we are trying to do with doing the disability awareness training? Is it time to write letters to congressional reps and to the governor, to whatever? What action do you think that we can take to make sure the disability awareness training, that our responders are trained when we need them? I will say there are some things that you can do on your own. We talked about the Go Kits, and in the Go Kits, and I think Erwin's going to hit on this a little bit more, but in the Go Kits, you want to have everything, documentation. I have started the process of scanning my Social Security card, my health insurance card, because God knows I don't want to be without it again, and scanning documents and putting them on a thumb drive that I can keep in my purse. And I'm going to label that thumb drive emergency. Yeah, exactly. Right, and you would have a health record, as Carol mentioned, that has your medications, your immunizations. You also might want to include things in there about your property. Do you have a property deed or finance? How about your will? Any of those things. And you don't want to just keep a copy with you. You want to have some other copies floating around in very safe places. So far in what we've talked about, you have your personal support network, you have your Go Kit, which has some various things that you're going to carry in it, and you have your plan. Who can you call for to help you out, whether the disaster be local or far away? Before I wrap up, I'm going to pass the podium over to Erwin, who is going to talk a little bit about his personal experience in the recovery phase of a disaster. Then once he finishes, I will come back and I will take a couple questions, and then we'll put the bow on it to wrap it up. Erwin?
Yes.
Got it.
Okay, thanks everybody. Our disaster was January of this year, January 30th, and some of you know, but my sister Mickey and I had gone to the store. We, and Paris was with me, my C&I dog, and heard some fire engines when we were at the store, didn't think anything of it. We're driving back down the street. Mickey thought, we're maybe going to have to go around the block. Or, it looks like it's a couple houses past ours. And then it's our house that's on fire. And boy, you talk about a sinking feeling. I'm almost numb. Mickey got out, there were like, I don't know what, 7 fire trucks and a couple ambulances. Because I guess at first they didn't know if we were home or not. And the Red Cross showed up almost immediately. Turned out it was a circuit breaker box. So in many ways, it was probably not preventable. Although I've heard afterwards recommendations that your electrical circuit should be checked every 10 years. And the breaker box wasn't that old. It was from 1972. So it was, relatively new wiring. I'd replaced a couple breakers over the years. It turns out Mickey had heard sort of a buzzing sound a week before, but by the time I got out there, didn't hear it, and we had no other indication that there was a problem. But it was major damage. In some ways, it's even hard to think about now because we lost the 2 dogs and 3 cats, including Dingo, who was becoming Paris's best dog friend. I mean, they were inventing games and playing together, and it's been really hard on Paris. You know, we were in some ways not really ready for this, especially some documentation-wise. You know, it was a big problem, and it probably will be forever. To make a very long story short, the house belonged to my mom. It was in her will, and she had passed away the previous October. So we were in the process of getting it transferred into my name. Well, the original will Mickey had brought back, it was in the house, it burned up. We had copies, but that's not good enough. The probate court now wants a deposition from the attorney out in California that it really is the right will and the copy's okay. So, you know, it just goes on and on and on. And of course, we can't really do anything about rebuilding until the house gets to be in my name. The support network of friends and neighbors was incredible. I cannot say enough about the folks who came through. Kate with Newsreel, we actually stayed with her for 3 months until we actually found an apartment. The Red Cross showed up, and they were great. They helped with getting refills on medication that night. This was a Sunday. We could have stayed in a hotel. Kate came through. She actually, of course, took care of the important thing, went and got dog food for Paris. You know, gotta take care of that. So it was wonderful. The neighbors next door invited us in for dinner. One of our friends, I practically a sister, Jan, came over. She and a neighbor had the windows all boarded up before nightfall. And that's an interesting story because there's one small way that blindness might have been a benefit. And, of course, that's something that rarely is the case. I was sitting in the car. I just stayed in the car with Paris because, you know, I didn't want her to get into whatever was going on. There was broken glass all over the place when the windows blew out, and some of them were broken by the firemen. So I just stayed in the car. I figured that was the safest thing to do. So Mickey was in with the firefighters and stuff. I went and talked to the Red Cross, who pulled up in the big van. And I have to say, they took the blindness in stride. There was never a problem. But these two guys showed up, and they claimed that they were going around to houses where there were fires, and they would board up the windows for free. And I said, oh, great. They're wonderful. They said, we'll be back in an hour or so and do it. And Mickey and I thought, okay, we'll see what happens. Well, I think they were there casing the house. They probably heard the announcement on the fire frequencies. But I think when they saw me being blind and the guide dog, they decided maybe that wasn't such a good idea. So, I don't know what to say. It's been quite an experience. I hope nobody else ever has to go through it. It's even hard to think about still sometimes today, especially with the loss of the pets. I'm just glad that Paris was with me. But, you know, it's been tough. Life goes on. You have to deal with it. It's either that or you just curl up someplace. That's not an option I want to do. But certainly, you know, important documents, the scanning is a great idea. Probably original documents should be in a safe deposit box someplace. Someplace that you can relatively easily get to, and that support network is just critical. And I can't say enough. The couple neighbors actually set up one Sunday at a bar, a fundraiser for us, and they did all the work. We went, I think, for about 4 or 5 hours, and it went on later, but they raised like $1,100, wow. Which was just amazing. The neighbors want us back, and we want to be back. Just very briefly, I did talk to Habitat for Humanity. And what they would have done was they would have taken a rehabbed house. We could have gotten it for a no-interest loan as long as we'd put in the sweat equity to work on it. But, and that was an option, but we really wanted to be back in the same place in the same neighborhood. And plus, my income was borderline. I probably, unless I really fudged a little bit, which I didn't want to do, probably wouldn't have met their guidelines. But the people have just been wonderful. I can't say enough.
Mention very quickly is Erwin made a good point about emergency responders and also on the riffraff potentially coming to your house at the most vulnerable point. Decide, do we want a special needs registry? A lot of people don't want to do that because they feel that it's too much to maintain. I will tell you that Delaware County and Captain Petorek has established a rather unique special needs registry that each person is kind of given, in essence, their web page. So you can do your own maintenance on their website. It is secure. Your privacy is definitely secured. And what they, the reason they have it is so that if they get called to your house, they know what to bring. They already know what special needs you might have. And they're prepared when by the time they get there. So I think that that's a real exciting concept. And again, something more to think about. I have less than 2 minutes. Are there any quick questions?
I have a quick comment.
Okay.
I've been told that Delaware County is third in the state for having benefits for the disabled and the handicapped, and it's probably a lot because of the man you mentioned.
Okay. Yes, he has done a lot, and it stemmed from him being willing to listen to a parent of a disabled child. So if you see Captain Petorek, get to know him. I just wanted to say, in wrapping up, that
Kitty, one more?
Yes?
Okay.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask, what specifically can we do to promote the idea of disability awareness among first responders?
Okay. That's a good question. What can we do to promote disability awareness? One thing is encourage them to attend the upcoming training. Another, I think, is to invite them to come to a chapter meeting. We did that in Cincinnati, and I think that the gentleman who came, who actually was from fire prevention, he came, and I think that people got to ask a lot of questions, and he gained some insight and exposure to being around people with disabilities. So I think that it's good to invite them and possibly go to speak to their groups. Also, community groups such as CERT, Citizens Emergency Response Team, VIPS, Volunteer, Fire and Police. There are a variety of community groups that have volunteers, and it's good to connect with them and maybe invite them to be speakers at your meeting and open some dialogue.
Thank you.
So, please use the tools that we've talked about, your support network, and getting involved with your community responders and make it worth their interest to help you and you help them as well. Remember, that is the most embarrassing thing. Making emergency preparedness is your business. Say it with me. Making emergency preparedness is your business.
I like that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kitty, in appreciation for your talk today, we have here for you an ACB cup with Braille on it.
Woo!
And a pound of ACB eye-opener coffee.
I better start learning to like coffee. Thank you very much. I wasn't expecting that. Thank you.
Good for you.
We really have to move quickly on, but thank you for Irwin and Kitty for that. As far as some websites, areyouready.gov has some really good information that you might want to think about. There's a FEMA document out there that is accessible. It's a PDF, but it is accessible. It's doable. So some churches even offer emergency preparedness information on their websites. You might check if yours does. Mine does, for example. ProvidentLiving.org, there's some, it's mostly focused on getting out of debt and how to, you know, do some of those kinds of things. But there's also some emergency preparedness information on making an emergency preparedness kit, a 3-day kit that you can grab and take with you. 1-800-BE-READY. That's outstanding, 1-800-BE-READY. So there are tools out there. You know, you and I don't have the excuse of saying, well, it's not accessible, I can't do that stuff. Yeah, no, the tools are there. My excuse is that I just, it's such an unpleasant thing to contemplate that I just don't. That's what it's all about. That's the problem, you know. Yep, nobody wants to plan their own funeral. It's like, no. So, okay, we've belabored this a lot, but thank you both for an excellent job. Well done. We need to move forward. I think, what's going to take the longest here? This vendor stuff or the membership stuff? The membership's fairly short, isn't it? Okay. Vendors, you've got more, don't you? Why don't you come up here and do your thing first? Yep. We're going to hear from Jackie Perry, who's been... Jackie Perry. Who's been... I'm like, well, I heard the last name.
We didn't put anything in, so we don't know.
Anyway, Jackie's been involved in the vending portion of our meetings, and she's going to talk to you about the vendor awards, the drawings.
You know how to get at it.
Gotta pull it down because I am short. Okay, the first one we're going to give away is box number one.